And good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is the KRFY Wednesday edition of the morning show, and we are live in the studios down here in downtown Sandpoint on First Avenue. And I'm Susie Prez, one of the hosts of the morning show on Wednesday. And
I'm your co-host. Good morning, Susie. I'm Chris Bessler.
Good morning, Chris. It's another great day out there.
You said great or gray?
Well, it's gray and great because every day is great. But I did notice when I left the house, it was almost dark.
I
did not like that.
I was actually kind of surprised at how dark it was when we got up this morning. It's like the short days just sprung upon us.
And here we go.
But we have a great show for our listeners today. Today, we're continuing our series on Local Decision 2016. We're covering the candidates of the local elections, the local contested elections. Today, we're covering the Idaho Legislative House seat. And the candidates for that seat are Kate McAllister and Heather Scott. We have Kate here with us. Say hi, Kate.
Good morning.
And of course, we did invite Heather multiple times, and she was saying she might come, but as it turns out, she's decided to skip it.
Yep, and we were hoping that she would, but we will continue on because the subjects at large are important for our listeners to hear how our candidates feel and stand on these issues. So yes, we'll go with that.
And I think it's incumbent upon the candidates and, of course, the elected representatives to use these forms to communicate with their constituents and tell their constituents what they're about, where they stand on the issues. And we're sorry that Heather decided to not to come for that reason. But before we get into our show, Susie, what's up with the weather?
Well, surprisingly, it says it's 43 degrees out right now. It feels warmer to me, but I don't know. That's what the National Weather Service is telling us. We have 100% chance of rain today.
Yeah, I believe it.
Okay, I'm kind of questioning that, but more rain, actually. High today, 47. Tonight, the low will be 47, and 80% chance of rain. That's awfully strange. I wonder if this is correct.
Yeah, don't you believe it after all the rain we've been getting?
I know, and tomorrow, 90% chance of rain, then diminishing on Thursday night, 60% to 20%. High Thursday 52 and low Thursday night 40. There's a little tiny bit of sunshine peeking through on Friday, patchy fog, then mostly sunny on Friday, and then it's kind of rain again. So
okay,
Friday.
All right. So let's look forward to Friday. Other things going on outside. We are approaching the new moon, which is Sunday. And we talked about the short days. Sunrise this morning was at 7:21 a.m. It sets at 5:37 p.m. tonight. We've lost 24 minutes of daylight per day during the last week, so we're approaching that winter solstice, which doesn't come till December, so the days do keep getting shorter. The lake level is at 2055.18 feet right now. It's come down up 1.85 feet in the past week, and it's projected this next week to drop over another foot, so the lake is coming down at a good clip. I don't know what the low winter pool is going to be this year, but we're already down 7 feet from the regular summer pool. And other things going on around town. I don't know if you've checked your calendar, but we have Halloween coming up.
Lots of parties. Halloween parties, both for children. At the museum, there's going to be one. And there's a big event at the Hive coming up, all about Halloween. Yep. And what's this Hospice Rose event? It's through October 28th. You can order roses. I think they do it every year. It's a large fundraiser.
It's a big fundraiser for the hospice. It's actually, I'm not sure what the pricing is, but it's actually a pretty good deal for a dozen fresh roses. And the money, of course, benefits the Bonner County Hospice. So it is a great event for people to take part in. They get something nice out of it, and they do a nice bit of fundraising for the community.
And if you want to order roses, here's the number to call. Call Lissa at 265-1185.
Yes, and you can get details on all the events and the calendars at krfy.org, our website, as well as sandpointonline.com, which provides the calendar. I did want to throw out, before we get into our program, I want to throw out just a couple other things. And one is that the plant facility levy survey is now active. and folks that are interested in how the school district's going to move ahead with repairing its buildings are asked to participate in this survey. Of course, the levy failed August 30th by a large margin. It was a $55 million levy to replace and repair a number of schools, district-wide, actually. So now the school district has gone back to square one. They do have something they have to deal with here. They need to deal with the facilities. They're asking their constituents to weigh in on this survey and tell them how they can proceed now with this. So to do that, go to the Lake Pend'Oreille School District website. You'll see a link to the survey there. That's lopsd.org.
All righty. I think we can get to our guest here in the studio, Kate McAllister, who is running for Legislative District 1, House Seat A, as a Democrat.
Right.
And so let's get to it, Kate. Why don't you start by giving us a short description of your background, experience, and qualifications? How long have you lived here in this district? Anything you'd like to share with our listeners to give us an give them an idea of who you are? And also you could add to that why you're running for this House Seat A.
So was the short a pun? Sorry.
Short would be good.
Right, right. I am Kate McAllister. I believe I've told my age so many times. I'm 57. I've lived here in Sandpoint 23 years. I am the president and CEO of the Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce. I've been that for 7 years. Previous to that, I did corporate social responsibility for a corporation in Liberty Lake, Washington. My husband is a forester. He's lived here for 40 years. And I'm the mother of four, the grandmother of eight. I have been involved in many things in our community. Angels Over Sandpoint, I was the president twice. I've been on the board three or four times. I've been appointed to SURA by successive mayors since 2013. I sit on the Human Relations Commission. I was on the PANADA board. I'm currently the vice chair of the Forest Bird Charter School Board of Directors. I'm the chairman of the board for the International Selkirk Loop. I'm on the advisory committee for Bonner General Health. I'm on the Sandpoint Area Planning Advisory Committee. I've been on the City Street Steering Committee. I'm on the Bonner and Boundary Economic Summit Steering Committee. So I like to be involved. And that kind of leads to the reason why that I'm running. Actually, it was about a year ago that I really started thinking seriously about it, because the question that kept going through my head was, who is representing me and those that I know? And I was very concerned about it. And so I thought about it a bit more. And then in December, I happened to have a meeting with another community person. We were meeting about something. I can't even remember now. And I said, I think I'm going to have to run because I'm really upset by what's going on and our representation. And so I got back to my office, and 20 minutes later, I got a call from the state. And they said, we hear you want to run. And I said, how long do I have to think about it? And they said, you have 6 weeks. And so during that time, I really did my due diligence, and I went around and talked to business owners, because as chamber president, that's who I represent. And I got a resounding please do, and other members of the community. And, you know, of course, my family was my first focus, and they all agreed that, you know, my youngest son said, Mom, this is exactly where your life has been leading you to. So we really think you've always taught us to stand up. So stand up and get out there and do it. And so I'm very passionate about North Idaho and where we live. And so that's why I'm running.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for that nice introduction. Have you held other elective office? You've held a ton of volunteer things. Okay.
No, I have not.
So you're a newbie politician.
I am so new that I did not even know what the acronyms meant. I had to call, and they were throwing all these acronyms at me. I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Well, you know, as they say, people like outsiders that aren't in the middle of the current system. So I guess you have that qualification, too, if that's
if
you consider that one. So, Kate, tell us, what are the top, you know, three or four issues that you think are most important for the representative of this district to be dealing with?
Well, really, the number one thing that I, because I went out and I did talk to many of the constituents about platform issues, and consistently the number one thing is education. And I don't know if listeners know, but Article 9, Section 1 of our Idaho Constitution says the stability of a Republican form of government, depending mainly upon the intelligence of the people, it shall be the duty of the legislature of Idaho to establish and maintain a general, uniform, and thorough system of public, free, common schools. And so that is not what is happening. We're 49th in the nation for spending. I find that appalling. That's not something to be proud of. And our kids really deserve a much better chance to join the workforce. They need to be workforce ready. And even up in Boundary County, they have a four-day school week, and they've been four-day school week for 10 years. And so when I was talking to some of the educators, too, they said that, you know, it actually works for them. The high school kids like the 3 days. It's difficult for the elementary school kids because they can't retain what they've learned. And then I started to think about the trickle down, like what about daycare and those expenses if you don't have a child in school? And they said, they're such a resilient little community. They said, you know, the 4-H groups got together and they offer free babysitting. And so they've overcome some of the barriers, but I still think, so education has to be number one because it's about our future and it's about their future. And really the second to go along with that is economy. You can't separate the economy and education because we need to have workforce ready kids and we need to continue to retain the great businesses we have in District 1 and to make sure that they stay and they offer good jobs and benefits. And, you know, by the time the Chamber of Commerce had our economic forum a couple of weeks ago, and Jeff Sayer was there, and he was former director of the Department of Commerce for the state, and he now works actively in education areas. And he said by 2020, Idaho will be 45,000 workers short to fill positions. And he gave a good visual of that. He said that is the equivalent of 2 full graduating classes for the entire state for 2 years. And so that's, you know, we are having people move here, mostly retirees who do add to our economy. They have more disposable income, buying goods and services. They're great community volunteers, you know, but we need that age group from 20 to 34 to start filling these jobs. And I think a lot of us noticed this summer, especially there were a lot of industries that were having a hard time filling jobs. Number 3 for me is public lands. Again, the Constitution says the people of the state of Idaho do agree and declare that we forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within the boundaries thereof. And it's easy to say that the management could just change hands, but it's not that simple. I mean, the entire dynamics would change of it. Taxpayers would take a big hit, having to pay $169 million for fire suppression for the additional 32 million acres. And where do we think that's going to come from? Taxes, and they'll probably cut other things. Idaho counties would lose about $28.6 million in federal payments in lieu of taxes. And then, of course, you know, the people that I have been talking to, the sportsmen and the recreationalists, are very concerned that lands would be sold and they'd lose the ability to go and hunt on those lands. And, recently Potlatch sold to a private organization and they completely shut down all those lands for hunters, even those who had tags. And so people have, you know, they're concerned about that. And it's also our legacy. The public lands are our legacy. So those are the 3. I also am very concerned about infrastructure, highways and byways. We need to make sure that we keep those because being a rural market, we have to get products to and from market. And the highway is the only way to do it. And, of course, the digital highway, we've been working on that. We've been working on that for years. And I've been on a number of committees to do that. And so hopefully we're actually going to see that come to fruition by early next year. So
very thorough.
Oh, thank you.
You've been thinking about these things, I can tell.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you for the top 3 to 4
day and
issues
night
that you've been thinking about. And so let's look a little deeper into one of those that you mentioned, and that's the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that you consider it a very important issue. And how do you see the state and what specific actions would you advocate or support to improve the economy and jobs through the legislature?
Well, you know, again, I think it really does come down to education. It comes down, if we don't have the workers to fill those positions, I think it's a matter of industry meeting education. I know that here at our high schools, Geraldine Meyer actually did a teacher in-service day, and the teachers had a field trip, and they visited Lighthouse, Bonner General, Coachava, and Quest so that they could talk to their students about these are the kind of the jobs that are available. And so, you know, unfortunately, not having served before, I don't know what I don't know. And so I really, there's a lot of things that I'm sure that I don't know, but the one that comes to mind is we really need to make sure that, you know, we have an educated workforce. I mean, I don't know the last time either of you went through a sawmill, but our sawmills are incredibly technologically advanced. I mean, it is absolutely incredible. And so even the timber industry now needs to have those kids who have industry recognized certifications. And, you know, that it just, I know I keep coming back to that, but every time I go out and talk to people, it really does, the economy and everything comes down to education. And we have to have that, or we're doing a great disservice to any of our jobs here. You know, we're very lucky in our area. We have PAFE. PAFE is, in fact, they paid for the teachers in service when they went around to the different businesses. And we have PTEC. A lot of people don't know about PTEC. And so, you know, PTEC was born here. And PTEC goes in and recognizes, or they talk to kids that are about, you know, sophomore and junior. And if they have the aptitude for aerospace industry, computer science, or even the medical field, they, you know, have them do dual credits so that when these kids graduate, they can go to work at Quest or Tamarack or Aeroset, and they've got a great job, and they can stay in our community. Because one of the things I keep hearing is one of our greatest exports are our kids, and that's not what we want. I mean, yes, we want them to go out and see the world, but we'd love them to come back and raise our grandchildren here. But they need it. They need jobs to do that. And, you know, PTEC, like there are kids, Coachava's hiring kids right out of high school. There was a great article about that the other day. And so these are, you know, we're trying to do this. I mean, even in North Idaho, we're really kind of thinking outside the box, and we're very innovative. And I really appreciate that about all of us. So, you know, it's hard for me to separate economy and education. And so that's kind of.
So for our listeners that aren't acquainted with the term, PAFE is a Peanut Alliance for Education. It's a nonprofit group that supports the schools. Mm-hmm. PTEC is a technical school that's really it's statewide now, but it started here.
It started here out of the Forest Bird Charter School.
Yes. So.
And I just want to give a shout out to Jimmy Soderberg. He is the guy he's also a trained DJ or broadcaster here at the radio station KRFY. But he is kind of a liaison between Coachava and the high school students, and it's a new program. So those are the innovations, maybe that we're thinking about.
Yeah, peer to peer, and
So here's a follow up question on the question of economy and jobs, and that is has to do with the minimum wage. Many states are increasing the minimum wage, some to as much as $15 an hour. Idaho's minimum wage is the federal minimum, which is $7.25 per hour. Do you believe Idaho should increase its minimum wage or hold steady?
You know, this is a very interesting question, and I've thought a lot about that. I do feel that the wages need to be higher so individuals can support a family. I mean, I know many, many hardworking people. They get up, they go to work every day, they come home, you know, and the last thing they should have to worry about is tomorrow. They should be able to make a good living. However, in our area, what I'm seeing is actually the market is driving the wages up. Going through McDonald's, on their window, it says, we pay $10.50 an hour, and if you stay 90 days, we'll give you a $100 bonus. And so, you know, in talking to a lot of the business owners in both areas, they don't pay minimum wage because they, you know, again, we don't have enough people to fill the jobs. And so they're having to pay these higher wages. And so I'm seeing that our market is actually driving the minimum wage up. And I've been trying to research some models. Like in Washington State, I know they raise theirs because the concern is, and me too, because as the chamber, we represent small businesses, is that, you know, it would take a hit and they'd maybe force them out of business. But the model in Washington has proven that they phase it in over a number of years, and it's actually working. But, you know, I also believe in free enterprise where, you know, the owner knows what they have to do. The business owners know what they have to do to retain good employees. And that really is coming down to a livable wage. People need to be able to make a living and pay their bills and send their kids to school. And so, You know, I do support a wage increase, but I really think that we're seeing the market is driving that right now.
Well, thank you. And as we know, in Boise, the legislature is always balancing income to expenses, mm-hmm. what they can spend. And back to education a little bit, the state budget for education was cut back drastically during the recession. Mm-hmm. And as the economy improved, they increased the budget, but not as much as possibly is needed.
Right.
Do you favor or oppose increased funding for education? And if you support increased funding, how can the state do that? How can they find the money for it?
I absolutely feel that we need to have increased funding on education. I mean, it's quite obvious, again, 49th in the nation. And during the recession, there were rainy day funds that they had to deplete in order to, you know, get us through the recession. However, those rainy day funds are being filled up again, and they have a cap on them. And once those rainy day funds are capped, then that money can be diverted to education. I think that that's really important. Now, that probably sounds very simplistic, but in the reading that I've been doing and talking to others who know, that seems the easiest way to do it, and then that's no hit to taxpayers. But, you know, there's also going to come a time where we need to decide if, you know, if that's important to our society as a whole, is an educated workforce. I will tell you, and I know that I have been admonished for this, but I supported the levy. I absolutely supported the levy. I will fully support education in any way possible. And, you know, people can say, well, my builder said this and our builder said this. But the reality is we need to fund education, and I'm willing to pay for that. I'm willing to pay through, you know, higher homeowner taxes. And, you know, because the bottom line is, and I won't be ashamed or try to cover up that I did vote for it. You know, I'm proud of the fact that I'm a citizen and I can vote my conscience and the way I feel. But, and so I really don't know, again, because I've never been an elected official, I don't know what else is available, but I'm certainly willing to look into it. And I know, though, that if I am so honored to get the votes to be elected, I don't get a choice in what committees I get to be on. So those are chosen for me. Would I hope that I would get education? Oh, yes, indeed. But I don't know that I would.
Well, one of the things you mentioned before is education does drive the economy, mm-hmm. in a sense that if you have a well-educated students, mm-hmm. you have the workforce to supply that economy, that vibrant economy.
Right.
So it's a win-win, maybe?
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. It's a win-win for all of us.
Okay, new topic here. healthcare, the Affordable Care Act is now in place, and Idahoans actually have signed up at one of the highest per capita rates in the country. They've had over 50,000 enrollments. But one provision in the law permits the states to expand Medicaid to cover another estimated 60,000 to 80,000 Idahoans who make too much to qualify for Medicaid under the current rules, but they don't make enough to be eligible for subsidies on the state insurance exchange, and so they have no health care at all right now.
Right.
Last late legislative session, lawmakers adjourned without agreeing on a solution for this. One solution is just to go ahead and expand Medicaid under the program. Mm-hmm. What, if any, action do you favor to cover the health care coverage gap for lower-income Idahoans?
Well, first of all, I want to give an idea to the listeners who are the workers in the gap, and they are, very hardworking people. And it is a misnomer to think that it's just the people who aren't working that aren't covered. That's ridiculous. People in food service and entertainment, call centers, daycare providers, and construction workers. We also have 3,800 veterans who fall in that gap, along with 1,200 spouses, because a lot of people think that the veterans have VA benefits forever, and some don't. And right now, who pays for the medical needs are the state general fund, those in the gap, counties, those of us with insurance, hospitals, and care providers. If we close the gap, who will pay is Medicaid managed care, the state general fund, and Idahoans in the gap. If Idaho closed the gap, we'd see $132 million in saving from eliminating the county indigent programs, $176 million in savings from eliminating the state catastrophic fund. Bonner General Hospital paid almost $400,000 last year for indigent funds. And those, you know, those are the people that don't have insurance, and you wait till you get so sick that you have to go to the emergency room. And if you, you know, certainly they're going to care for them. That's their, you know, the Hippocratic Oath. You got to care for those. But we pay for it in our taxes. If we close the gap by 2020, that'll create 13,000 jobs statewide and generate about $2.5 billion in wages. And we would have $216 million in new state and local revenues. And then also business owners now have to pay a fine, or they have to pay a, fine if some of their employees aren't insured in the gap. And so if we close the gap, the Idaho businesses would benefit by $12 to $18 million annual in avoidable tax penalties. And there is an option if you go to, I really highly encourage everybody to go to closethegapidaho.org so you can find out more. So what this, there is a group of legislators and others working on this to close the gap, and it's called a Section 1115 waiver. And the key is to decide within this waiver who to cover. There are six states now who are taking advantage of this, and most of them cover ages 19 to 64 and 130% of federal poverty level, and that seems to be the norm. And so for the first step, I'm told, is to figure out who we're going to cover, and then it can be designed according to what our state wants. And we can design our own plan, what works for our best for our budget and healthcare systems and Idahoans. And so, you know, others have said that, well, we should just do charity care. You know, that would be adequate, but more people have died if you do charity care. And it's really not specific to what we need. It's not a one size fits all. And so I believe that we need to come sort of to some sort of solution. I was a single mom for a while. And I'm telling you, and, you know, there were times when you don't have insurance, and I'm telling you that it's horrible at night when you go to sleep and you think, please don't let me or my children get sick because I can't even afford a $30 copay. And so that's a horrible, horrible place to be in. And when we have the opportunity to have Medicaid dollars work for us, and those are our federal income taxes, we have already paid that money. And why can we not get it back? It's going to other states if we don't take it. And so I am very strongly, we have to close the gap. Everybody deserves to have good health care.
Are you aware of the reason why not to accept the federal money and close the gap? What the argument against what you just laid out is?
Really, the only argument that I have heard is that they don't want to take federal dollars. I mean, that's really because it doesn't make sense to me. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me, so...
Yeah, and I think it's the principle of getting on a federal program that is driving that. But we would let your opponent or others speak to that on another occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And Susie?
Well, we're going to take, if you're up for it, Kate, we're going to take a little musical break. It's
okay.
A short song.
Sure.
And it is, right now, this is 88.5 KRFY, community-supported radio for North Idaho. And this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie, and our guest today is Kate McAllister, who's running for District 1, House Seat A. And we're going to be right back with a whole bunch more questions. This is great. But someone's birthday is today. Does anyone know whose birthday it is? I always do this to Chris.
Apparently you do.
I do. And I think I might have mentioned it to Kate, but it's Hillary Clinton's birthday,
oh,
by
right.
the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was born on October 26, 1947. She's 69 years old. And this is in recognition. I think this is one of probably her favorite songs. It's Aretha Franklin, Respect. We'll be right back. It's a short song. So stay with us on The Morning Show. So how about a little respect this morning? That's Aretha Franklin, and we're here live in the studios of KRFY. This is The Morning Show, and it's Wednesday, and I'm Susie Prez with my co-host here today,
Chris Bessler. Hello, Susie.
Again.
Hello.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention a couple of things before we get back to, we're talking today with Kate McAllister. She's the Democratic candidate for the Idaho State Representative House seat A. Her opponent, Heather Scott, the incumbent, declined to come on. But I did want to mention a couple things that are coming up. One of them being an election form that is next Wednesday. It's a candidate's form, November 2nd. It's from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Sandpoint High School auditorium. Everyone's invited to that. And you can get more information about that on our calendar. But mark it on your calendar. Yeah, if you want to get it, be an informed voter, do come to the forum. The forum takes questions from the audience. It's a moderated format, but it's an opportunity to ask candidates questions and get their answer. Also, coming up next Thursday, November 3rd, there's an economic summit. It's called the What's Happening Up North Prospering Business Workshop. It's put on by the Bonner County EDC. I wanted to mention that because it's free to attend that. It's a pretty much an all-day thing. It's happening at the Sandpoint Technology Center. And the keynote speaker is Lieutenant Governor Brad Little, along with some local business leaders and more than a dozen panelists that will be speaking that are involved in business and commerce. That's free. You need to register by October 31st, and you can do that at whatshappeningupnorth.org, or you can find a link to that as well on the carefy.org or Sandpoint Online calendar pages. And with that, let's get back to today's topic. Kate, again, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
And let's continue on with some questions on the issues. You touched on this, but we want to dig in a little deeper on the question of public lands. Mm-hmm. There's an active movement within Idaho promoting the transfer of federal lands to the state. Do you favor or oppose this effort would be one question. And the second question would be, should the legislature even be dealing with this as an issue, do you think?
I'm absolutely opposed to putting public hands in or public lands in public hands. I think changing the management would change the whole outlay of, you know, many things that we hold near and dear here. And again, it's just not as easy as switching managers. I was very thankful that I was asked to attend the opinion leaders tour for the Idaho Forest Products Commission group. And that was a 2-day tour and learning everything from seedlings to end products with the timber industry. And I really honor the timber industry since that pays for half of my home and everything else, being my husband being in the timber industry. I don't see how that could really be viable to the state of Idaho and to the citizens, because again, the amount that we would have to pay for fire suppression, and you know, it's almost the sin of omission when they talk about taking over the lands would be so much better for us, and that they're not saying, you know, what the other side of that again is with the taxes. But the one thing that we did learn about on the tour is called the Good Neighbor Authority. And they actually started working on the Good Neighbor Authority in May of 2016. And even my husband, we talk about how some of the federal lands are overgrown, how we wish we could go in and take some of the, you know, timber after a fire, because you only have a certain amount of time to do that. And everybody knows that to keep the forest sustainable and keep them healthy, that these kind of things need to be done. And so through collaboration, groups got together, the Forest Service, Department of Lands, et cetera, and they came up with the Good Neighbor Authority. And the Good Neighbor Authority allows the Forest Service to enter into agreements or contracts and to allow Idaho to perform watershed restoration, forest management services on national forest lands. And it's a program that's about improving forest health, reducing the occurrence and severity of wildfires, and creating more economic opportunity. It provides the authority for all the national forests within Idaho to enter into local agreements with the Idaho Department of Lands to implement projects. It requires financial commitments from all partners, and that includes industry, Idaho Forest Group, Stimson Lumber. So everybody is in on this. And the goal is to increase forest and watershed restoration in the federal forest, which in turn improves the health, lessens wildfire threats. And so this is really a viable, great thing that they have come up with. And it is everybody getting together going, hey, this needs to happen. And actually, the first auction of merchantable timber was just done under the Good Neighbor Authority in the Clearwater Forest. It was the Wapiti sale. And then currently, they're working on a project up in Hanna Flats and Priest Lake area. And so this is a really great solution, and it's working very, very well in Colorado and Utah. And, you know, again, on this forestry tour, when all of the players were there, Forest Service, Industry, Department of Lands, Bureau of Land Management, all of them, without a doubt, these leaders saying that it just would not work if the lands were managed by the state of Idaho. And so those are industry experts telling us that. That's not just somebody reading and coming out with that. And I, you know, highly encourage that if you disagree that you call them. And those are the people who, you know, live and breathe the timber industry. And, you know, it's still a very viable part of our economy up here in North Idaho. And so to me, this Good Neighbor Authority really appeals to me, because then I know that the lands will, you know, our public lands will still be in good hands. And I have people on, friends on the East Coast who, you know, really admonished me when they first heard about this, you know, group trying to take back the management of land, saying, are you kidding me? Those lands belong to me too. They just don't belong to Idaho. And so we also have to think of the bigger picture. And again, it's our legacy. It's our legacy to our children and grandchildren and, you know, and tourism, the tourism side of it. Tourism is 35% of our economy in this area. And we know how many recreationalists and tourists come here to, you know, be a part of the woods and the beautiful forests and lakes and, you know, streams. And so we really need to take that into consideration. And, you know, what would be the downside, again, of the Idaho of managing those lands?
So just a little follow up. One of the arguments against the federal government or federal holding these public lands mm-hmm. and managing them is that they're not adequately doing that, be it true or not. But what you're saying, this Good Neighbor Authority is looking at that
right
question and saying, here's a solution.
Right. That answers that. Right. That is the solution. And again, it's not like that was a surprise to those who, you know, work in the timber industry. But it was difficult. And even if they were to change management, the Forest Service would still own the lands. And so how are you going to overcome all of the, you know, all of the bureaucracy and the paperwork and, you know, how long it takes to get a timber sale going? How are you going to overcome that even if you just manage the land? So it's kind of the same. You'd still be in the same situation unless you own those lands. And so the Good Neighbor Authority, I was very excited to hear that, because a lot of people on this tour, and again, there were current sitting legislators on the tour, there were candidates, there were other opinion leaders, and those were the questions, is that, okay, but we got to manage this land. It's overgrown, our watershed, you know, most of our water comes in, and how are we going to do that? And so then we were told about the Good Neighbor Authority, and I was very excited. I was very excited about that. So
here's a couple follow-ups on the question of public lands that are local issues for us, actually. There's a proposed wilderness in the Scotchman Peaks mm-hmm. area. Part of that is in Bonner County in Idaho. Do you favor or oppose that?
Oh, I favor that. I have gone to Washington, D.C., I think 2 years ago with the executive director of Scotchman Peaks to actually encourage them to declare it wilderness. I was thinking when I went there, it was with my Chamber of Commerce hat on and thinking about tourism. And again, I'm one that needs input from everybody and in doing my due diligence, just about there's no one opposed to it. I mean, and it can't be mined, it can't be logged, it can't be, you know, but it's a great, I mean, you look at the goats, we got to protect the goats up there. And it's a beautiful place, and there really isn't any reason why we shouldn't protect it. And tourists come here specifically to go and hike that and, you know, get back into nature. And so, it comes down to economics. It is an economic value to us, and I absolutely support making that a wilderness designation.
Okay, another follow-up on this public lands topic. There's a proposed mine at Rock Creek, the Rock Creek Mine. That's across the line in Montana, but it mm-hmm. poses water quality threats to our biggest tributary, which would come right down into Lake Ponderé.
Right.
Where do you stand on the approval of a permit for the Rock Creek Mine?
One of the most precious natural resources we have is our water. And once we lose that, I'm not sure that we can get it back. You know, I believe in industry. However, I think that I support not giving them the permit, because I don't want the tailings to come into our water. I don't want our water to be ruined. Again, that's our, you know, that's our livelihood. It comes down to the economy. How many people come here to be on the lake, to enjoy all of the water that we have? And I have not yet been convinced by any sort of group that our water wouldn't be affected. I mean, until they can absolutely prove positive 1,000% that it would not affect our water in a negative way, then, you know, then I'm not for that.
Well, thank you. Another kind of ecological question. Well, climate change.
Okay.
How does the state manage or think about or come up with plans or be involved in the question of climate change? And if they agree that it's something to deal with and take care of, what can the state do?
Again, not being, you know, a previous elected official, I'm not sure how much they are or how much we are involved in climate change. I do believe climate change is happening. I was very lucky to be a part of when I was getting my certification from Boston College. We had a gentleman named Dr. Stephen Schneiderman, who is one of the world's foremost experts on climate change, come in and talk to the class about it. And he said, you know, it's not a matter of just the last 50 years, it's thousands of years. And yes, climate is cyclical, it goes around. But then, you know, when you point out to where man came involved in industry, I think it's really, in my opinion, this is not a political opinion because I really don't know what the state is doing on it. I think we need to really be aware of that. We need to make sure that our part of the world is aware of what's going on with water temperatures rising. Look at last summer. It was a scorcher last summer, you know, and even in the woods, my husband has noticed things in the woods, you know, species that are disappearing and species that are, you know, rising up. And so we need to start paying attention. And I'm not sure what the state is doing, but that is also something I'm very concerned about. And again, it's really has to do with, I have 8 grandchildren, and what legacy are we going to be leaving to them? And we need to make sure that we don't mess it up for them.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we can squeeze in another question here. And this is, hopefully it'll be educational for our listeners because there's a lot of confusion about this. On the ballot, there's going to be a proposed constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
It's House Joint Resolution 5.
Right.
And this is an amendment to the Constitution that would add a section to provide that the legislature may review, approve, or reject any administrative rule to ensure it's consistent with the legislative intent. Now, U.S. Senator Jim Risch says vote yes for this. On the other hand, the Idaho Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin, he's made a strong argument for voting no. Can you tell us a little bit what you know about this amendment? Because it is confusing to a lot of people. And yeah. Tell us, how do you fall on this? Do you support it or oppose it?
You know, it is so crazy because this was kind of one of the zingers when I'm reading things. And it seems to me that, you know, attorneys write all of these things, so it's very obfuscated. You have no idea if you vote yes, that means no, vice versa. So I went out and I talked to very well-respected people on both sides about what it is and what, you know, how they think about it in hopes that it would inform my decision. And I have to say that I still am struggling with exactly what it means, but I'm leaning towards yes because it allows a process to the Constitution that is occurring with most agencies today, that it allows final review of the rules that result from laws by the legislator that created the law, and the final review is by a body that citizens elect every 2 years instead of appointed committees. So in that sense, to me, the voters have more say. And so again, I had to write those down as I thought about them, as I'm thinking about them. So I'm sorry that I read them off of my page because I have a hard time understanding it too. And it is what I hope that I can do. Again, I don't know how it's going to roll out, but if I again am honored enough to receive enough votes to be elected, I want one of my goals to be able to break down these things and put it in very like 7th grade language. Here's what this means to you. Who benefits? Because it's ridiculous that as voters, we can't have an understanding just by reading something on the ballot, that we have to go out to 10 or 15 people and go, can you tell me, is this going to be good for me? Is it going to be bad for me? And so that's my
yeah, it's not really,
humble opinion.
Really not a partisan issue. This is a question of how our system of government works.
Right.
And it goes to the separation of powers between the executive branch and the legislative
right.
branch. So that's what voters are going to have to consider.
Right.
This gives a little more power back to the legislative branch, I think.
Correct.
So
it was on the ballot once before and did not pass, and it's come back.
It actually failed by a lot. It didn't mm-hmm. pass on a simple majority, but I think it takes a supermajority for a constitutional
right.
amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Well, we really want to thank you for coming in, Kate. And
you're welcome.
Kate McAllister, candidate.
Well, I think we should give her two minutes.
You betcha. No, that's on there. It's called wrap up. And but just, you know, you're running for District 1, House Seat A.
Mm-hmm.
And just give us a little wrap up of who you are and, you know, whatever you want to say.
Okay. You know, I really feel that my life experiences have led me to this moment to represent North Idaho. I have a passion, a great passion for North Idaho. Our quality and way of life is incredibly important to all of us. And everybody that I have spoken to throughout my campaign, the one thing that is absolutely clear is we have shared community values. And those shared community values are education, the economy, public lands. Those are things that we all share and that I want to fight for. I will represent all of North Idaho, and I'll do my best to move us forward in regards to our shared values. I will collaborate with fellow legislators and committee members to make all our lives better. And I know this isn't about me. I am just the vehicle to represent all of us. So send me to Boise, and I will be your strong voice for you and North Idaho. So vote for Kate on November 8th.
Okay. Thanks. And Kate, how can people find out more about you or contact you?
They can go to my website, katemcallister.com, or on my Facebook page at Kate for Idaho.
Okay.
And we'll see you at the forum at
the high
school next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday,
November 2nd.
I'll be there.
5:30. We're going to take a little musical break and let Kate go on with her day. But thanks again for coming in, Kate McAllister. This is Bruno Mars, Count on Me. We'll be right back with some community calendar on the KRFY Morning Show. And that was Bruno Mars, Count on Me. And you're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. We are live in the studios, Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. And we just had a nice conversation with Kate McAllister. You can hear that interview with Kate McAllister again on Friday night, drive time, 5 o'clock. We will be rebroadcasting that. And also, you can go to our website at krfy.org, and it will be in our podcast slot. And you can re-listen to it, or you can direct friends to listen to it to get informed and to become an informed voter. And remember, voting day is Tuesday. It's less than 14 days away on Tuesday, November 8th.
Yeah, and actually, I think a lot of people are really looking forward to
it being done.
To it being done, especially with the presidential election being so rancorous. It's like going to be a big sigh of relief for the whole country, I hope.
Big party one way or the other.
For some group, yeah.
Yeah. We are also talking about the forum next week. That is another opportunity for voters to get informed. And then on Wednesday next week in the morning on the KRFY Morning Show, our guests will be, you want to tell us, Chris?
They will be our Idaho State Senate candidates, and that's the incumbent, Sean Keel, and her opponent, who is Democrat Steve Tanner. And that's next Wednesday at here at 8 a.m. on the morning show.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard from both of them that they will both be here.
Well, good.
So we will see.
We have a much better conversation when we have both candidates
that's
here.
And again,
it's incumbent upon the candidates to use these forums to communicate with their constituents. So we appreciate it when they participate.
We have about, and tomorrow, the KRFY Morning Show with Jack will be here. I don't know who his guest is yet, but they'll be here, whoever they are. And that's at 8 o'clock.
Well, his guest is Paul Cushy.
Okay.
He's the executive director of the Bonner County EDC. And he's going to be talking specifically about this this economic summit, which I mentioned earlier. I'll throw out another shout on that. It's coming next Thursday, November 3rd, And it's called the Prospering Business Workshop. Everyone's invited. It's free. It starts at 8 a.m. and it runs till 2:30 p.m. at the Sandpoint Technology Center. You do have to pre-register, and registration is required by October 31st. They have a keynote speaker, Lieutenant Governor Brad Little, is going to be talking about state economic efforts. And we have over a dozen other speakers from local businesses and regional economy and commerce agencies. So very informative day. You can sign up at whatshappeningupnorth.org.
That sounds good.
There's another very interesting expo that's coming up on Saturday, October 29th. It's called the Bonner County Citizens Preparedness Expo. It's running from 8:30 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. That's this Saturday at the Bonner County Fairgrounds. There'll be local businesses and organizations participating in this all-day workshop that includes tips, talks, vendors, and displays on food and water storage, alternative energy, secure homes, emergency communications, first aid in emergencies, and the types of emergencies to be ready for.
It sounds interesting.
It sounds like a very good thing for anybody to take part in.
Mm-hmm, I agree with that. We have just a few minutes left, and just want to thank our listeners for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. And we want to thank everyone who donated to our online auction. It is closed. We did really well. And also to thank everyone who bid on the online auction. It was a success, and it's another way that KRFY is financially viable, is through participation like that. So we're very, very grateful.
Yeah, that's great. And there were a ton of really good items on there, and I was checking it out over the weekend just before it closed.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of things that I wanted were already being bid at full value or even more than full value, mm-hmm. which means that the bidder was recognizing that all that money comes to KRFY to help support our effort to keep on the air. So we really appreciate the bidders, and we really appreciate all the sponsors who donated their goods.
Businesses and individuals in our area who are so generous.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate that. We're going to say goodbye for now and welcome you to tune in again next week on Wednesday for another edition of Local Decision 2016. And Chris, I hope you have a great day.
Yes, and I want to say thank you to our listeners for listening.
Yeah. This is Fleetwood Mac, Don't Stop. And you can listen to Otto's Eclectic Mix all day. Thank you. Enjoy your day.